Chapter 86. Head of the Home Department in his place, whether it is intended to be conveyed that the vanished person has been spirited away or otherwise harmed. Instead of Lightwood's answering, Eugene answers, and answers hastily and vexedly. No, 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 he doesn't mean that. He means voluntarily vanished but utterly completely. Apostrophe, however, the great subject of the happiness of Mr. and Mrs. Lammel must not be allowed to vanish with the other vanishments, with the vanishing of the murderer, the vanishing of Julius Hanford, the vanishing of Lizzie Hexham, and therefore Veneering must recall the present sheep to the pen from which they have strayed. Who so fit to discourse of the happiness of Mr. and Mrs. Lammel, they being the dearest and oldest friends he has in the world? Or what audience, so fit for him to take into his confidence as that audience, a noun of multitude or signifying many, who are all the oldest and dearest friends he has in the world. So Veneering, without the formality of rising, launches into a familiar oration, gradually toning into the parliamentary sing-song, in which he sees at that board his dear friend Twemlow, who on that day 12th bestowed on his dear friend Lammel the fair hand of his dear friend Sophronia, and in which he also sees at that board his dear friend Boots and Brewer, who's rallying round him at a period when his dear friend Lady Tippins likewise rallied round him, and in the foremost rank he can never forget, while memory holds her seat. But he is free to confess that he misses from that board his dear old friend Podsnap, though he is well represented by his dear young friend Georgina. And he further sees at that board this, he announces with pomp, as if exulting in the powers of an extraordinary telescope, his friend Mr. Fledgeby, if he will permit him to call him so. For all of these reasons, and many more which he right well knows, will have occurred to persons of your exceptional acuteness, he is here to submit to you that the time has arrived when, with our hearts in our glasses, with tears in our eyes, with blessings on our lips, and in a general way with a profusion of gammon and spinach in our emotional ardors, we should one and all drink to our dear friends the Lammels, wishing them many years as happy as the last, and many, many friends as congenially united as themselves. And this he will add, that Anastasia Veneering, who is instantly heard to weep, is formed on the same model as her old and chosen friend Sophronia Lammel, in respect that she is devoted to the man who wooed and won her, and nobly discharges the duties of a wife. Seeing no better way out of it, Veneering here pulls up his oratorical Pegasus extremely short, and plumps down, clean over his head, with Lammel, God bless you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, then Lammel. Too much of him every way, pervadingly too much nose of a coarse wrong shape, and his nose in his mind and his manners, too much smile to be real, too much frown to be false, too many large teeth, to be visible at once without suggesting a bite. He thanks you, dear friends, for your kindly greeting, and hopes to receive you, it may be on the next of these delightful occasions in a residence better suited to your claims on the rights of hospitality. He will never forget that at Veneering's he first saw Sophronia. Sophronia will never forget that at Veneering's she first saw him. They spoke of it soon after they were married, and agreed that they would never forget it. In fact, to Veneering they owe their union. They hope to show their sense of this someday, no, no, from Veneering, oh yes, yes, and let him rely upon it, they will if they can. His marriage with Sophronia was not a marriage of interest on either side. She had her little fortune, he had his little fortune. They joined their little fortunes. It was a marriage of pure inclination and suitability. Thank you. Sophronia and he are fond of the society of young people, but he is not sure that their house would be a good house for young people proposing to remain single, since the contemplation of its domestic bliss might induce them to change their minds. He will not apply this to anyone present, certainly not to their darling little Georgina. Again thank you. Neither, by the by, will he apply it to his friend Fledgeby. He thanks Veneering for the feeling manner in which he referred to their common friend Fletcherby, for he holds that gentleman in the highest estimation. Thank you. In fact, returning unexpectedly to Fletcherby, the better you know him, the more you find in him that you desire to know. Again, thank you. In his dear Sophronia's name and in his own, thank you. Mrs. Lamela sat quite still, with her eyes cast down upon the tablecloth. As Mr. Lammel's address ends, Twemlow once more turns to her involuntarily, not cured yet of that often recurring impression that she is going to speak to him. This time she really is going to speak to him. Veneering is talking with his other next neighbor, and she speaks in a low voice. Mr. Twemlow. Apostrophe, he answers. I beg your pardon? Yes? Apostrophe still a little doubtful, because of her not looking at him. You have the soul of a gentleman, and I know I may trust you. Will you give me the opportunity of saying a few words to you when you come upstairs? Apostrophe, apostrophe, assuredly. I shall be honored. Apostrophe, don't seem to do so, if you please, and don't think it inconsistent if my manner should be more careless than my words. I may be watched. Apostrophe, intensely astonished, Twemlow puts his hand to his forehead, and sinks back in his chair meditating. Mrs. Lammel rises. All rise. The ladies go upstairs. The gentlemen soon saunter after them. Fletcherby has devoted the interval to taking an observation of Boots' whiskers, Brewer's whiskers, and Lammel's whiskers, and considering which pattern of whisker he would prefer to produce out of himself by friction, if the genie of the cheek would only answer to his rubbing. In the drawing room, groups form as usual. Lightwood, Boots, and Brewer flutter like moths around that yellow wax candle guttering down, and with some hint of a winding sheet in it, Lady Tippins. Outsiders cultivate Veneering, M.P., and Mrs. Veneering, W.M. P. Lammel stands with folded arms, Mephistophelian in the corner, with Georgina and Fletcherby. Mrs. Lammel, on a sofa by a table, invites Mr. Twemlow's attention to a book of portraits in her hand. Mr. Twemlow takes his station on a settee before her, and Mrs. Lammel shows him a portrait. You have reason to be surprised, apostrophe, she says softly, but I wish you wouldn't look so. Apostrophe, disturbed Twemlow, making an effort not to look so, looks much more so. I think, Mr. Twemlow, you never saw that distant connection of yours before today? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, never. Apostrophe, now that you do see him, you see what he is. You are not proud of him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, to say the truth, Mrs. Lammel, no. Apostrophe, if you knew more of him, you would be less inclined to acknowledge him. Here is another portrait. What do you think of it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Twemlow has just presence of mind enough to say aloud. Very like. Uncommonly like. Apostrophe, you have noticed, perhaps, whom he favors with his attentions. You notice where he is now, and how engaged. Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. But Mr. Lammel, apostrophe, she darts a look at him which he cannot comprehend, and shows him another portrait. Very good, is it not? Apostrophe, apostrophe, charming. Apostrophe, apostrophe, says Twemlow. So like as to be almost a caricature? Mr. Twemlow, it is impossible to tell you what the struggle in my mind has been before I could bring myself to speak to you as I do now. It is only in the conviction that I may trust you never to betray me that I can proceed. Sincerely promise me that you never will betray my confidence, that you will respect it, even though you may no longer respect me, and I shall be as satisfied as if you had sworn it. Apostrophe, madam, on the honor of a poor gentleman, apostrophe, thank you. I can desire no more. Mr. Twemlow, I implore you to save that child. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that child? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Georgina. She will be sacrificed. She will be inveigled and married to that connection of yours. It is a partnership affair, a money speculation. She has no strength of will or character to help herself, and she is on the brink of being sold into wretchedness for life. Amazing. But what can I do to prevent it? Demands Twemlow, shocked and bewildered to the last degree. Here is another portrait. And not good, is it? Aghast at the light manner of her throwing her head back to look at it critically, Twemlow still dimly perceives the expediency of throwing his own head back, and does so. Though he no more sees the portrait than if it were in China. Decidedly not good, says Mrs. Lammel. Stiff and exaggerated. But Twemlow, in his demolished state, cannot command the word, and trails off into Mr. Twemlow, your word will have weight with her pompous, self-blinded father. You know how much he makes of your family. Lose no time. Warn him. Warn him against whom? Against me. By great good fortune Twemlow receives a stimulant at this critical instant. The stimulant is Lammel's voice. Sophronia, my dear, what portraits are you showing Twemlow? Public characters, Alfred. Show him the last of me. Yes, Alfred. She puts the book down, takes another book up, turns the leaves, and presents the portrait to Twemlow. That is the last of Mr. Lammel. Do you think it good? Warn her father against me. I deserve it, for I have been in the scheme from the first. It is my husband's scheme, your connections, and mine. I tell you this, only to show you the necessity of the poor little foolish affectionate creatures being befriended and rescued. You will not repeat this to her father. You will spare me so far, and spare my husband. For, though this celebration of today is all a mockery, he is my husband, and we must live. Do you think it like? Twemlow, in a stunned condition, feigns to compare the portrait in his hand with the original looking towards him from his Mephistophelian corner. Very well indeed. Are at length the words which Twemlow with great difficulty extracts from himself. I am glad you think so. On the whole, I myself consider it the best. The others are so dark. Now here, for instance, is another of Mr. Lammel but I don't understand. I don't see my way, Twemlow stammers, as he falters over the book with his glass at his eye. I warn her father, and not tell him. Tell him how much? Tell him how little? I am getting lost. Tell him I am a matchmaker. Tell him I am an artful and designing woman. Tell him you are sure his daughter is best out of my house and my company. Tell him any such things of me, they will all be true. You know what a puffed up man he is, and how easily you can cause his vanity to take the alarm. Tell him as much as will give him the alarm, and make him careful of her, and spare me the rest. Mr. Twemlow, I feel my sudden degradation in your eyes. Familiar as I am with my degradation in my own eyes, I keenly feel the change that must have come upon me in yours, in these last few moments. But I trust to your good faith with me as implicitly as when I began. If you knew how often I have tried to speak to you today, you would almost pity me. I want no new promise from you on my own account, for I am satisfied, and I always shall be satisfied, with the promise you have given me. I can venture to say no more, for I see that I am watched. If you would set my mind at rest with the assurance that you will interpose with the father and save this harmless girl, close that book before you return it to me, and I shall know what you mean, and deeply thank you in my heart. Alfred, Mr. Twemlow thinks the last one the best, and quite agrees with you and me. Alfred advances. The groups break up. Lady Tippins rises to go, and Mrs. Veneering follows her leader. For the moment, Mrs. Lammel does not turn to them, but remains looking at Twemlow looking at Alfred's portrait through his eyeglass. The moment passed. Twemlow drops his eyeglass at its ribbon's length, rises, and closes the book with an emphasis which makes that fragile nursling of the fairies, tippins, start. Then goodbye and goodbye, and charming occasion worthy of the golden age, and more about the flitch of bacon, and the like of that. And Twemlow goes staggering across Piccadilly with his hand to his forehead, and is nearly run down by a flushed leather cart, and at last drops safe in his easy chair, innocent good gentleman, with his hand to his forehead still, and his head in the whirl. Book the third, A Long Lane. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.